Hey friend, do you want to offer meaningful learning solutions that create behavior change, fit in the flow of work, and yield real results for your nonprofit? If yes, this is the podcast for you. Join me as I explore instructional design and leadership development best practices, as well as change management, belonging, and influence. If we haven't met yet, I'm Heather, and I've been in your shoes. I'm a learning and development consultant and founder of Skill Masters Market. Before starting my business, I led learning and leadership development initiatives for a large national nonprofit. I know what it's like to need to develop your staff quickly and effectively and to build the relationships and cut through the organizational layers to be successful. And I'm bringing all of that to you in this podcast. So block your calendar, turn off your Teams or Slack chat, and let's dive in. It's learning for good. Are you tired of the same old approach to developing training? A subject matter expert walks in and they say, "We need a training." And off the learning and development team goes to start the project. Now, I know that most learning and development teams try to pause and identify learner needs, and they gather as much data as they can so that they can make decisions about that work. But sometimes it just doesn't feel like quite enough. And it leaves the L&D team feeling frustrated. That's why I've invited a self-proclaimed frustrated changemaker, Heather Hiscock, to join me today to talk about how she uses data to overcome the status quo. Now, Heather is outside the world of L&D, and I love that. We can learn from all different areas, and Heather's work in changemaking might be just the thing for us. So let's dive in. It's learning for good. Heather is a frustrated changemaker on a mission to change the way we change the world. Heather is the founder and CEO of Pause for Change. The Pause method is a proven and proprietary framework that helps changemakers address difficult challenges and pursue promising opportunities. These skills help organizations be certain about which solutions will create the greatest impact while using fewer resources and less time. Heather is the author of No More Status Quo, a proven framework change the way we change the world. Heather is also the co-creator and host of Possibility Project, an online conversation series and growing community of disruptive changemakers reclaiming their power through meaningful spark, connections, and action. Heather speaks at conferences and events about social impact, disruption, and innovation, and has launched several ventures that benefit the social impact sector, connecting organizations to the training, skills, and resources they need to deepen their impact. Heather, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to talk more about data and how you use it, what your approach is, and then start to think through what L&D can do different as a result of this conversation. But before we dive into the data talk, maybe we'll touch on it a little bit. I'd love to hear a little bit about your career journey. How did you get to where you are today? Why do you care about data and disrupting the status quo?
Oh, great question. Oh, it's definitely a winding journey, which I think a lot of us have. But I really got into this type of work due to my own frustration. Working in social impact, and what I consider social impact is to be nonprofit, local government, and philanthropy, this triad of social change. Working in those different sectors and just being really annoyed and frustrated of, are we actually making change? Are we working the most efficiently and effectively as we could? Are we really engaging all key stakeholders? Are we really learning? And are we sharing that learning? And the answer was like, no, we're not doing the best work. We could do so much better. And so I really stepped out of the sector and did some for-profit exploration, some social entrepreneurship exploration to try to figure out what other people were doing to really optimize this learning, this sharing, this engagement of all internal and external stakeholders to just do a better job at decision-making and creating new processes, policies, programs. So that's really how it all came to be. And I've had the honor of working more than a decade now with organizations all over the U.S. to help them address problems in whole new ways using these new skills.
I love that. I love that you're bringing your experience in the social impact sector as well as the for-profit and like thinking through how can we take the best of both worlds to really use data in the most effective way we can to create that change. Yes. So in L&D, it's important for us to understand both the organization strategies, so the strategic plan, the any kind of organizational goals or operations plan, right? DEI commitment. It's important for us to understand those strategies as well as the learner's needs so that we create the right solution. Tell me a little bit about how that compares to the work that you do.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I hear about strategies, and the kind of the bucket that I put strategy in is what we typically see in social impact is we see logic models, we see strategic plans, we see evaluation plans, and that really gets put into this pot also with evidence-based strategies that might have happened in another community, another city, town, state, country that organizations want to just readily adopt. And I think that strategy is weak to just rely so heavily. I really see those as containers of assumptions. Like they're really helpful to give you clarity in your thinking, but not all of those key objectives or KPIs or goals that you have in mind, or even the metrics and timelines and people assigned to them that you've attached and bundled, they might give you the illusion of certainty, might make you feel like you have a plan to move forward, but often those are full of assumptions because they're humans are embedded within all of those strategies and these finite little boxes that we've created in spreadsheets. We don't know what's going to happen. So often we respond to uncertainty, respond to something that's going on that's not working well, or something like, what if we could optimize or improve or create something new? But those don't quite get us where we need to go. So I think that's why the learner's needs are so important. When I think of learners, I think of everyone engaged with an organization, internal and external. What are their goals? What have they tried before? What worked and what didn't? What assets and abundance and resources did they have? How are we framing the questions we're asking? So it's an important marriage to understand that our strategies are fallible and that we're working with humans who are infinitely complex. So how do we use different skills to really do the best learning to create the best outcomes?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I know between the two of us, L&D and your work in change making, we both use data. We both use a lot of data as much as we can or we need. Why, in your opinion, why is it important to use data? Or in your experience, what have you seen?
Why I think it's so important, and there's a couple caveats, is that I see a lot of pet projects or like a leader, usually someone with power, decision makers will say, I think this is the way forward. I think this is the best solution. I feel that this policy structure will work best. And so because they have institutional power, they're able to then put those into sort of a change management mode of, okay, team, this is how it's going to work. This is your role. Here's the accountability structure for when you're going to get this done. But it doesn't really account for that power dynamic of saying, well, how do you know? What makes you understand this better than anyone else? Why do you get to decide the path forward? Because you're not really supposed to say that within an organization. It's seen as disrespectful. And as a leader, you're not supposed to show gaps in your understanding. You're not supposed to walk around the organization saying, well, I don't know if this is going to work, but well, let's just try it. Like, you're supposed to exude confidence. This is the plan, and I know why it's the plan. But that removes all of us from the larger and more impactful conversation around power and around our positionality and our bias, because we've just accepted this is the way things work, and this is how we measure, and this is who gets to measure, and this is who is measured. But there are so many challenges to the dogmatic thinking and the ways that we collect data. So that's one bucket of what I'll say is data is really complex and we don't give it its due. We don't really spend enough time talking about who says what data is meaningful and how to collect it, what is right and wrong. But I think the other end of it is that we can't just make decisions based on power and decision-making ability. We have to really make decisions based on what we have the proof of what people are able to participate in terms of solutions. And we often don't have that for a year or two. But in the framework that I use, the PAUSE framework, we learn it in weeks and hours and months. We don't have to wait as long as we do. So it's a mixture of absorbing the tensions and having a different way to approach data.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I bet we have some listeners who are nodding their heads right now, because we do in L&D, we often have a subject matter expert or someone else in the organization coming to us almost as an order giver. So we're the order taker, right? We need this training. It's got to be this way. And our job in L&D to then shift that conversation, if that happens, to really identifying what the needs are and what the solution could be based on those needs. But to do that, we need data, right? We need to go to those learners. We need to understand what their experiences are like, what expertise they're bringing, if there's a change involved, what success looks like. We need to really understand all of those things from their perspective as well in order to identify that right solution.
Absolutely.
So I think that power dynamic probably rings true in L&D as well.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yes.
So when L&D is going through this process, when we are identifying learner needs and we're trying to really understand what gaps exist or what solution might be best, typically we'll run interviews or focus groups or even surveys to start to capture some of that data so that we have it and can then interpret and move forward from there. What have you found in your work to be the best way to capture data?
Yeah, I often will tell organizations that I support, focus groups and surveys, I get it. I know why we do them. There's an efficiency element to it. There's a feeling of we're concretizing the system and the way that we're gathering the data. So it's an online form. People can enter their responses, and then we can have a spreadsheet and make some intelligent understanding of what's happening. So I get the desire to do surveys, and I get focus groups are very, again, pretty efficient. Different than surveys, so you feel like you get to go a little deeper, you get to have more of a human connection, but you also get strange dynamics around groupthink and the whole introvert-extrovert, and the levels of engagement can be a little bit wonky. And then with surveys, of course, we never know who's going to reply and those sorts of dynamics. So I tell the organizations I support, yes, if you're compelled to use those tools, okay, and know that those are just going to give you a compass direction of where to focus your energy. They're not the end all be all. They're just letting some early insights. And what I really encourage organizations to do is to do one-on-one interviews, to do empathy interviews. And how we get ready for interviews is we first focus on our uncertainties. We really celebrate and embrace and pull out, what do we not understand? What do we not know? What do we not have existing data around? What are we really curious about? What are we missing? And then that helps us feel free to learn very openly that we don't have to have all the answers. So it changes the whole tone and dynamic of our learning experience. And then we structure our questions and prioritize order based on the uncertainties that we have. We try to fill in some blanks. Of course, if there is data out there, we can go collect it. If there's previous research, we can go grab it. But we really want to focus on the one-on-one experience and interviewing. And what we also focus on, and I learned this really early in my career, is that in order to do empathy interviewing, you have to be able to make an empathetic connection. And that's really hard if you first don't think about the lens that you use to see the world. We are all biased, right? There's 180 forms of documented bias that have been studied and peer-reviewed, published, right? We're all biased. We all have our own positionalities. Dr. Leslie Ann Noel has her wheel of positionality with the 12 different ways to construct how we see the world and how that's ever-changing. I had to have teams really focus on how they view data, how they view learning in their own situation, to really get them ready to be able to absorb the lived experience and the truth that another person can have that might be in direct conflict with their truth and their own lived experiences. I had to get them ready for that. So then once we've done that work and really opened ourselves up to the full learning capacity, then we can start to have those one-on-one interviews and start to pull out themes and those insights that emerge.
Do you wish you could connect with other nonprofit learning and development leaders? I know what it feels like to want someone to bounce ideas off of and to learn from, someone who really understands you and your work. Imagine if you could have a simple way to meet people in the field, ask questions, and share information. That's why I created the Nonprofit Learning and Development Collective, where nonprofit, L&D, talent management, and DEI leaders can connect with each other quickly and easily in a virtual space. When you join this community, you will walk away with a new, diverse, and powerful network and a sounding board for your staff development needs. So if you're ready to exchange ideas and collaborate with your peers, come join the nonprofit L&D Collective. Yeah, I appreciate all of what you're saying. I think even just your approach and even the title of what you're saying, right? Empathy interviews, it just is a different way of thinking about how you're going to go and gather the data, because we often think about what we need when we're in the data gathering process, which is okay, right? We need to focus on the uncertainties. There are things that we're trying to learn, but really thinking about it from that empathy perspective and being willing and able to hear someone's lived experience and what their needs might be, knowing that they might be different than our own. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And I appreciate you sharing those pieces of wisdom with us. So when you've done this and you're doing these empathy interviews and you're training other people to do these empathy interviews, how does that data then get used in your work?
Well, we pull out those key themes. What's emerging? What are we noticing over and over again? And the biggest question I always get asked is, how many people do I have to talk to know the answer? And we say, you just talk to as many people until you just keep hearing the same thing over and over again. And I once had a contract with a large organization that was a collection of foundations across an entire state. And they wanted to talk to 70 to 80 of the different organizations. After about interview 30, we heard the same thing over and over. We still, you know, finished the contract as written, but you start to get a sense, I'm not getting anything new. It keeps falling into the same areas. So when, once teams reach that level and they really feel like they've done a good job of doing the interviews and they pulled out those insights, then we start to brainstorm potential solutions. Often in status quo problem solving in response to when something's not working or new exploration is we start with solution. And then we just start designing and we work in these little silos until we do a grand reveal, ta-da, for our stakeholders. But that's highly wasteful, not very efficient, usually not quite effective. So what my team is really focused on first is understanding the problem, identifying uncertainty, going and doing those excellent interviews, then starting to pull out those insights, which leads to their abundant and really bold brainstorming. Because often we brainstorm in the scarcity. I joke, we have 5 minutes, five people, and $5. What can we create? And that just doesn't generate a lot of great stuff. So we say, okay, imagining that we could really actually address this problem, we actually could create a tremendous program. What are all the different solutions? So they might have 40 different ideas. So it feels like we don't just have this one thing that we have to build. So it's make or break. And there's all this, there's tricky parts to that. But we can go back and we can prioritize these different potential solutions and we'll choose one to test at a time. And then the teams learn to, instead of building a solution, to actually break a solution. They break it apart into its component assumptions. And then in the Lean Startup methodology, we run rapid solution tests to really see what level of engagement are people able and willing to do to participate in our solution. And we can run those tests in 45 minutes. In 2 hours, we don't have to perfect a program, launch, and then wait and see. We really can start to study human behavior really quickly and start to capture those insights and continue to collect data. And there's a key component when we are running those solution tests, we're also doing additional empathy interviewing. We're never done being curious. We're never done learning. We're never done connecting to create the best possible outcome. So teams learn to use this rapid framework to get answers. And that's the data that they use to then go back to decision makers and say, here's what we know will actually work.
Yeah. So I love how you pulled all of this together, really thinking through what does the data tell us? What are those themes? And then brainstorming potential solutions based on that, testing it. And a lot of times in L&D, we often try to do some sort of pilot or beta test process so that we know how it works, what people experience when they attend a training, for example, so that we can continue to improve. And then we often put things into a continuous, kind of a continuous quality improvement process so that training can be iterated over time after more at scale, right? After more people have gone through that process. So I love that you're doing that and you're trying to break it apart and you're continuing with those empathy interviews so that you're continuing to get that input and that data so that you know what, quote unquote, know what will work in the end, but you have a more informed recommendation that you can go back to the leadership with.
Exactly. And it disrupts the power dynamic that I mentioned, where I am the leader, this is the plan, you do your part, and I'm holding you accountable, because there's so much uncertainty. That's really not fair. And that's where we get into those, the fear-based approaches and the change management and some of that waste. If instead a team can go to a leader who's open and vulnerable, they're really open to learning. If a team can go back to a leader and say, wow, we also thought your idea, your suggestion was sounded great. It made perfect sense logically. But you know what? We talked to 30 different people and the problem is actually this over here. Or we tested these 7 assumptions that were part of the solution that you had in mind and nobody wants that solution. It turns out it's this or this. I've never had a leader, no matter how command and control, no matter how much they love power, ever reject that learning, to ever look at the team and say, oh, well, that sounds fine, but we're ignoring that. We're moving back to my idea, right? They're always so open and so appreciative because they've often never talked to anyone. Sometimes they're farthest away from stakeholders. They're farthest away from the key users of a process or program or policy. And I love working with those leaders who are vulnerable and open enough to say, wow, great job, team. Thanks for informing our path forward. And they help encourage more and more members of their staff to work in these new ways.
Yeah, that makes sense. You mentioned at the beginning that it can often be hard for a leader to admit gaps, right? So having that data presented to them in that way allows them to move forward in a way that acknowledges those gaps. It doesn't make them feel like they're not a good leader because of it, right? Like it supports their leadership versus feeling like it's undermining them in some way.
Yeah, and it also has tremendous impact in the organization. For example, many nonprofits I support, they do grant writing, right? They put in grant applications for funding. Instead of doing a traditional grant application, if they're able to frame it and their learning journey of what they've done, if they're able to say, we just recently talked to 50 community members. Here's the key learning. Here are the top 5 solutions we identified. Here are the top 3 that we've selected to move forward. Here are the 20 different assumptions that we've tested, which the foundation is already being highly critical of. They're thinking, can they actually pull this off? Is this going to work? They're already imagining those things. If they can say, we've already tested the riskiest components of these different ideas, and here's the result. Here's what we know will actually create impact, and here's what it's already demonstrated. I've had so many foundations say that those applications stand out head and shoulders above any others because it's just backed up with this data and it's so immediate and it's so relevant. It's so compelling that they can't say no. It's just such a strong application. And that goes for their donor conversations. It goes with the ways that they engage their board members, community buy-in and engagement. It just has this beautiful ripple where that data is not just data. It's really this transformative puzzle piece that allows them to get and create the impact that they want.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I think it's really interesting to think about how different groups can use data. You mentioned the grant piece, but then also thinking about the board and other, like the community members, really thinking about how we can use data with different groups or in different ways to benefit the nonprofit, but ultimately the people that we're serving and trying to create change with. So I think that those are some great examples of how different groups in an organization can use data. When I think about L&D specifically, I know I've walked a little bit through the process that we use, but from what you have heard, what you know about L&D, how do you think L&D can use data to create more impact in their training?
I think that empathy piece is huge. And I think also I consider myself a facilitator, a trainer, an educator, a coach. There's a great quote my friend Michael O'Brien said from Human Nature in Philly, that when we create something new, essentially, like saying we're all designers, we're creating the future for someone else. Like we're imagining the future on behalf of others. We're designing their experience. We're designing their reality in certain ways. If we're creating learning curriculum, materials, experiences, feedback forms, our evaluation processes, we're shaping what their experience will be with what we created. And that's tricky because what we create is deeply embedded with our own positionalities and biases and experiences. And so I think there's an excellent opportunity for you, me, for all of us in this space, and especially in social impact, because we get this altruistic, move on by, you're good. No, we have a lot of work to do in social change to really think about data in new ways. And in Possibility Project, the conversation series that I lead, we had two different episodes that I think were really impactful in shaping my thinking around data. One is called Anti-Racist Learning and Evaluation, and the other is called New Choices for How We Assess Impact. What is possible beyond either or? It's really that yes and thinking, the ways that we question who decides what data is to be collected, who participates in those processes, what's extractive about those processes. And George A. from Greater Good Studio in Chicago, he talks a lot about many of us don't have a code of conduct. We don't have a certification with accountability attached to this type of work, especially the co-design and interviewing type work. It's very much a, what he calls a BYOE, bring your own ethics, Wild West situation where we're all doing this differently. And in some ways, we can actually create harm. We can recreate harmful practices that have been committed and conducted, especially in our work with community members and even in the workplace. I would argue we're reactivating some workplace trauma that many people in some cases have experienced. So I think there's a really important opportunity for all of us to think about the role that we play, our power that we hold, and how that influences the data we do collect and how we do engage to collect that data.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm glad you shared that. I will drop your information in the show notes. So if anyone wants to learn more about the PAWS method or your approach to working with data, to gathering data, they'll have that opportunity to do so. I think it's great that we're always continuing to learn and be better, right? To your point, there's nothing really guiding or certifying how we're doing this work. And so making sure we're doing it without harm is important. So I'll definitely drop that information in the show notes so anyone who wants to learn more can grab that. Heather, thank you for joining me today.
Yes, thank you. This is wonderful. It's so great to chat with you.
This was so good. And it's going to be so helpful for so many people who work in L&D or in other teams that create training, who are really trying to understand learner needs and use that data, gather that data and use that data in a really impactful way. So thank you.
Great. Thank you so much.
Heather had so much good stuff to share. I love her approach of starting with the problem, creating a problem statement, right? And then identifying the uncertainties. What do we not know about that problem? Then going out, collecting that data, identifying the themes and brainstorming solutions before ever making a decision. So you have an abundance of solutions to choose from that are going to help meet those needs. Now, I know many of you are doing some data collection in some way or another, so I would love to hear from you. How are you collecting and using data when you're creating training? Head over to the nonprofit L&D Collective and share so that your colleagues from nonprofits all over the world can weigh in and hear what you're doing. That's it for today. I'll see you next time on Learning for Good. Hey friend, was this episode helpful for you? Did you like what you heard? Do you want more content like this? Here are three things you can do. Hit subscribe, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast app of choice. Share this episode with a colleague. This means so much to me personally. I read every review, but it also helps me learn what content you like most so I can create more of what you want. All right, turn that Teams or Slack chat back on when you're ready, and I'll see you next time on Learning for Good.